Billboard, baby, do a leap and make them dance when they come on. Everybody looking for a dance floor to run on.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here, sitting in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks for listening this afternoon, having a lot of fun talking about Alito, talking about birds. One of our previous callers, Tom, had mentioned the barred owl. We're going to play just the audio of the barred owl. I've got a barred owl in the woods behind my house, and sometimes this is what I hear at night. You've got that, Brian? Well, there it is, the barred owl. It's a common owl. It's a little smaller than a great horned owl. A great horned owl is the meanest bird in the forest. It'll eat a barred owl, actually. So don't get in the way of a great horned owl. But that's the barred owl. The mnemonic device for the barred owl is, who cooks for you? Who cooks for you?
I've known about the horned owl ever since The Secret of NIMH. And I know that that's a scary, scary thing.
No, you do not want to get in the way of a great horned owl. On a more serious front, a political front, I've got one of the rising stars of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin joining us on the line, State Assembly Rep Katrina Shanklin. She's running right now in the 3rd Congressional District. She's got a primary, and she's trying to unseat the odious Derek Van Orden. Representative Shanklin, thanks for joining the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Why don't you tell me and tell our listeners why you've decided to run for Congress?
I have always been a solutions-oriented person from a young age. My parents taught me that if I see a problem, instead of just complaining about it, I need to figure out a way to fix it. And in this case, I know that Congress is broken. House Republicans are leading the chaos and obstruction. And Derek Van Orden has really been one of the greatest problems. He's been creating more problems than he has solving them. He's been screaming at members of both parties and really not only disrupting the State of the Union and fundraising off of yelling at the president, but screaming at kids in the Capitol. And that really is not who we are in Wisconsin. We're extremely fair-minded people who want our elected officials to work together to get things done. And that's who I am. I have been working in the state legislature for the last 12 years, representing Central Wisconsin, most of Portage County, and the state assembly, and getting results, whether it's from water quality and helping people get access to clean drinking water or supporting farmers with conservation. I know how to get things done and reach across the aisle, and that's really what people in the 3rd Congressional District and Wisconsin want. Meanwhile, Derek Van Orden is really contributing to the problems that we see in Congress. It's been the least productive session of Congress since the Great Depression. And so I think it's pretty unanimous around here across the third that he's got to go. He's not working for us. And we need someone with experience getting things done to replace him. So that's why I'm running for the third. And I'm really excited about this race.
Representative Shanklin, you mentioned Van Orden screaming at kids at the Capitol. Those were interns, or those were pages. Those were people, young people who were working in the Capitol for free, or essentially for free, right?
Absolutely. They were U.S. Senate pages who were there to not only understand democracy and the policymaking process, but also to be able to participate in government and to see somebody like a sitting member of Congress scream expletives at them while he was leading a tour. And then it sounds like from the footage, he also bowed afterwards as though he thought his performance was funny. It really brought bipartisan condemnation to his behavior. And that was just the start. Right after that, he decided to follow it up with screaming at the White House during a really important intelligence briefing, and a number of members of Congress spoke out against him then too. Most recently, he's been in the news for picking fights with his own party, calling them names, and encouraging them to lead another motion to vacate, which is the last thing this country needs, is even more inaction and even less results, even fewer results. And so that's who Derek Van Orden is. He really can't help himself. If he's not screaming at people in the Capitol, he's on Twitter blocking his constituents or calling them names. And so it's not behavior that I think anyone would find becoming of a member of Congress, but we have a solution, and that's electing me to Congress to get things done for the people of our state. It's what I've already done in our state legislature, and we need proven leaders with the experience to reach across the aisle to solve big problems. So that's really why I'm running.
Representative Katrina Shanklin, I mean, it sounds like Van Orden's Marjorie Taylor Greene in drag. This temperament problem he's got, you know, he showed us many times. First of all, he was there on January 6th. He was part of the Stop the Steal so-called rally there. There's a question of exactly what he did there that's up in the air, but he certainly was there, and he can't deny that. He also had gone, I think, into a bookstore or a library in La Crosse and took down a display of LGBT books. Am I right about that? We're having a little bit of audio there with Representative Shanklin. I think she'll call us back and try to get us on that. Derek Van Orden is just such a clown, though. I mean, here's what he said on Twitter just a second ago or a day or two ago about the Trump trial. This is the trial with the election interference, bookkeeping felony alleged with Stormy Daniels. Here he was on Twitter saying, it's time for this Soviet-style show trial to end. I don't know what he's looking at there. It's far from a Soviet-style show trial. Do we have Representative Shanklin back? Yeah.
I am here. I apologize.
No, no worries. Live radio, you never know what happens. That's why I love it. Remind me about that bookstore or library incident where he was taking down LGBT books and screaming at a young person.
Absolutely. Yeah, he went to the Prairie du Chien Library. There was a Pride Month display in the month of June, and he not only tried to check out all of the books, but he was very disparaging to the teenage librarian. So he has shown us time and time again who he is. He does not represent Wisconsin values. He certainly doesn't represent the people of the third, and we're doing everything possible to flip this district blue and really restore positive, strong representation to this seat and to Congress.
Yeah, who he is a bully, plain and simple, and he's shown that in so many ways. Representative Shanklin, you talked a little bit about your background. I know you mentioned water. You've done a lot of work in the legislature here in Madison about clean water in Wisconsin. Tell us a little bit about that work.
Absolutely. I'm proud of the work I've done. One of the biggest issues that I have identified in central Wisconsin, but also statewide, is that many people can't drink water from their taps. In central Wisconsin, in my county, Portage County, one in four people with private wells cannot drink water from their taps due to nitrate contamination. And in other parts of the state, that's true for PFAS, bacteria, nitrate, and others. And so I worked with Governor Tony Evers and the DNR to launch a $10 million grant program to help people treat their contaminated well water or repair, replace, or reconstruct their contaminated private well. So over 500 families statewide can now drink water from their taps because of that work that I did with Governor Tony Evers. I also had a bill to do the same that I'd been working on for years. And when one person, Speaker Robin Voss, chose to obstruct, even though I built a bipartisan coalition of people in both houses to pass it, I went to the governor and said, let's use federal dollars to launch this program as a supplementary to the state program. So that way we can marshal as many resources as possible for people to get clean drinking water. I believe that that's a right that everybody deserves. And I've been working hard not only to do that, but I've also passed several bills into law to prevent nitrate contamination from beginning. So this is our most common contaminant due to usually commercial fertilizer or manure spreading. And so I worked across the aisle to pass several new programs into law to help farmers manage their nitrogen loading on the front end. We have a commercial fertilizer pilot program that farmers across Wisconsin are using in coordination with UW system researchers who are helping them ensure their crop yields are high while also protecting our clean drinking water and our public health. We've also launched cover crop insurance rebates for farmers who want to plant cover crops or multi-species cover crops to help them take up that nitrogen and prevent it from leaching into the groundwater. So I'm really proud of that work because I know that agriculture is integral to our state's heritage. It's also part of our future, and it's part of our food security and national security. And so when I champion our local family farmers, I'm also working to champion conservation and protecting that farmland into the future. We're investing in our best conservation practices.
Representative Shanklin, I know you've done a lot of work across the aisle. Do you want to mention a couple of the Republican legislature?
For our land and water.
Do you want to mention a couple of the Republican legislators that you've worked with on these bills?
Sure, yeah. So I was the vice chair of the Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality, and I worked with Representative Todd Novak and Representative Travis Tranel to introduce these ag bills that I mentioned that marshal resources for conservation. We also expanded the state's farmland preservation program. So Representative Oldenburg and Senator Teston were the leads on that, and that was a multi-year effort to get that bill passed, but we just recently expanded those tax credits so that farmers investing in soil health and who are protecting our water have access to better tax credits on the state level. So that was really landmark legislation. So I'm really excited about that work and want to continue doing that in Congress and the Farm Bill to make the Farm Bill work for everyone and to really expand on those best practices nationwide.
So it really is possible to reach across the aisle, right?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people see the headlines when Republicans and Democrats disagree. And while those are accurate, they don't represent 100% of what we're doing every day. I have co-authored, co-sponsored, and introduced 225 bipartisan bills that were signed into law by both Democratic and Republican governors in my time in the legislature. Some of those bills were landmark legislation, one of which I think people thought we could never get done. So I want to highlight it. Requires all public schools in Wisconsin to teach the history of Hmong and Asian American peoples. And I'm really proud of that work because that bill had been around since 2006. I took it over in 2018 and said, I want to organize on this and build a coalition of people in both parties to get it done. I made it bipartisan. And every year we grew that bipartisan coalition, and Governor Tony Evers signed it just a little while ago. And now we're celebrating it as part of Hmong and Asian American History Month, Hmong Month in April and Asian American History Month in May. So it's been a great lesson for many people to learn that while Bill might have died over and over and over again, sometimes it takes the right person persistent.
Well, thanks so
and
much.
When they hear no, offers a menu of options.
Thanks for getting that one over the finish line. That's Representative Katrina Shanklin running in the 3rd Congressional District to defeat Derek Van Orden in Congress. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. We'll be back with Spencer Black in just a second.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here. Subbing in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Appreciate you listening this afternoon. If you want to call in, the phone number is 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-2482. I want to thank Representative Katrina Shanklin for being our guest in the last segment. She's running to defeat Derek Van Orden. You can find information on the web about how to support her campaign if you'd like to do so. And now I'm pleased to introduce an old friend of mine on Facebook and someone I'd wave to in the Capitol if I was there walking the halls a while back, Spencer Black. He used to lead the Democrats in the Assembly. He was a great proponent of ending gerrymandering in Wisconsin, for instance. He's done a lot of work with the Sierra Club since leaving office, and he had an interesting article in the Cap Times recently about how important it is to reelect Joe Biden because of Joe Biden's concern for conservation, especially conservation on our public land. So I wanted to ask Spencer Black to join us on the show, and he's here on the line.
Well, good afternoon, Matt.
How have you been, Spencer?
Oh, life's good. Enjoying a beautiful day today. Had a nice hike this morning, and life's good.
Where were you hiking?
Up in the Merrimack area, along the Ice Age Trail.
Pretty. Now, we had a segment on bird watching. You know I'm a crazy bird watcher, which is a redundancy. We're all crazy. We vary only by degree. Did you see any interesting birds out there?
I did. I had a nice view of a couple of bluebirds, and we scared up a couple of cranes and heard a few interesting ones, including I was with some people who are far more knowledgeable about birds than I, but we think it's called a yellow cuckoo, which is somewhat unusual in Wisconsin, I gather.
It's a yellow-billed cuckoo and has a weird sound.
Yellow-billed cuckoo. Yellow... I knew a bird like you would get it right.
Yeah, they're two kind. All right, here, I'll nerd out on you here. There's the guttural sound of the yellow-billed cuckoo. There are two kinds of cuckoos in Wisconsin. Really, three if you count me. But there are two kinds of cuckoos. There's the yellow-billed cuckoo and the black-billed cuckoo. So there you have it. I heard a cuckoo in the yard the other day, and I couldn't tell which one it was. But anyway, I didn't have you on for a quiz on cuckoos. I had you on to talk about Joe Biden and why is it important to reelect Joe Biden. So take it from there, Spencer.
Well, there's a lot of reasons, but I think we can talk about the reason I wrote my recent column on was a reason that probably doesn't get as much attention as it should, which is Joe Biden's incredibly successful record about conserving our public lands. You know, the president is in charge of the lands that the United States government owns, which is over 600 million acres for a variety of purposes, everything from the military to forestry. But needless to say, many of those lands are national parks, but others that are not in the national parks have tremendous environmental benefits and conservation values. And Joe Biden has done a great job of protecting many of the most beautiful, biologically rich, and recreational valuable lands that the United States government owns. I should say it poses a striking contrast to what Donald Trump says he wants to do with those lands. So it's an issue that, as I say, Matt, hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but I'm glad you're paying attention to it because I think it deserves it.
Well, I think this issue of conservation, the environment in general, our public goods, you know, the environment is a huge public good. Our air, our water, our forests, the birds we're able to see, the hunting we're able to enjoy, the fishing we're able to enjoy. Here in Wisconsin, one of the great things about being in Wisconsin, having all these tremendous resources in our public properties, such as the state parks and the public lands. You warn that if Trump gets back in office, what's he going to do?
Yeah, there's a contrast. As I mentioned in the column, Joe Biden has protected over 41 million acres of the public land since he's been in office. Donald Trump is quite a contrast. He recently had a dinner, I think about two dozen CEOs, top-level executives of the oil companies at Mar-a-Lago in Florida. And he said he wanted a deal with them. If they raised $1 billion for him, he would basically let them do what they wanted with our public lands. You know, these lands that the government owns, we're all landowners. These are things that belong to all of us. But too often, they've been used just to benefit special interests and not the public at large. On many of these lands, Biden has turned that around. But Trump is promising, especially if the oil executives pony up $1 billion, to reverse all the progress and let the oil companies just do what they want with lands, many of which are incredibly valuable in terms of scenic values, in terms of local economies, in terms of wildlife recreation. So it's a really stark contrast between the two.
And what
and we can talk about some.
I'm sorry for interrupting, Spencer. Sorry. I'm speaking with Spencer Black, yeah, former leader of the Democrats in the state assembly here in Wisconsin. What those companies want to do is, drill for fossil fuels, extract fossil fuels from our public lands, which will only make the climate crisis even worse. So not only are they going to be devastating our environment, but they're going to be adding to the climate crisis. So it's a bad twofer, isn't it?
It is, exactly. And many of the times when these oil companies have been allowed to go by a president in the past, and certainly one like Trump in the future, not only have they been able to exploit the lands either through mining or through drilling, but also they've done it in a way that's environmentally incredibly destructive, polluting rivers, leaving toxic waste sites that will haunt us and future generations for decades and decades. So it's very important not to exclude resource use on the public lands, but to have a balanced view of it, where conservation values are considered alongside the extractive resource values. And that's what Biden has just done. He's just changed the national policy for our public lands to say both those things have equal measure, that we're not going to exclude forestry or oil extraction or mining of minerals from the public lands, but we're going to balance it with also concern for conservation and protecting the natural values of those lands.
You know, the first one of the first articles I ever wrote as a journalist was about oil companies and mining companies stealing oil and minerals from our public lands and from lands held by American Indians. And so I've never trusted them after that. But it's a real problem if we have Trump coming in, making the deals with the CEOs from big oil and big gas, and then just letting them plunder our public lands and destroy our environment. We have got about a minute left, Spencer Black. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to give your best pitch to people who are undecided as to who to vote for president.
You know, I'd say if you're a Democrat or Republican, if you care about our environment, you care about enjoying our natural environment, leaving some of the special natural values for future generations, then there's probably no bigger contrast between the two candidates for president than the issue of how we deal with our public lands and conserving those public lands. Joe Biden has prioritized protecting those lands, protecting those values, and Donald Trump would reverse that and has promised to do so, in fact.
There you go. You hit the mark. Thanks so much for being our guest today, Spencer Black.
Hey, good talking to you, Matt.
My pleasure. Hope to see you soon. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show, and we'll be right back. Subbing in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show of the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks for listening in this afternoon. Really enjoyed getting the opportunity to be behind the wheel here. And in this last half hour, I've got a great guest. He's an old friend of mine. His name is Doug Bradley. He's the author of several books. He's a Vietnam veteran. He's written a lot about the war and about the music of the war. One of his books, Who'll Stop the Rain, Respect, Remembrance, and Reconciliation in Post-Vietnam America, which, and he also wrote a book with Craig Werner, We Gotta Get Out of This Place, the soundtrack of the Vietnam War. His own Vietnam memoir called Deros, D-E-R-O-S, Vietnam Dispatches from the Air-Conditioned Jungle. And his music-based memoir, The Tracks in My Ears, is coming out next year. Doug Bradley, thanks for joining us on Memorial Day weekend. That's why I wanted to have you. If I was on the ball, I would have asked you earlier for it, but I was reminded of how cool it would be to have you on this Memorial Day weekend because you posted something on the web about Memorial Day just the other day called, entitled, He Ain't Heavy. Talk to me about that column.
Matt, it's always a pleasure to be in your company, and it's great to be on the show. Yeah, it hits me hard. It seems almost harder every year when I get close to Memorial Day because, you know, even though we thought we were relatively safe and protected in the air-conditioned jungle in the rear.
And by the air-conditioned jungle, what do you mean?
Well, you know, we had to have creature comforts. If we were going to keep the morale of the troops up and we were going to keep sane and keep doing what the government wanted us to do. They had to give us, they gave us music, which was great. But if you were in the rear like I was, you worked for the brass and the generals and the colonels and the brass wanted air conditioning. You're in some of the most tropical heat, craziest weather you're ever going to experience. But
you weren't one of the brass. What was your job there?
Yeah, I was a information specialist/combat correspondent. So my job was initially to edit the newspaper and the magazine, go to Saigon, now Ho Chi Minh City, to put the newspaper together, and then distribute it the week after that. I would do command information newsletters, et cetera, you know, how to avoid getting venereal disease in Vietnam, for example. yeah, great topics.
That's an important subject.
Yeah, it was a big seller. The interesting thing was our office had both command information and public information. And just because the guy I replaced, because remember in Vietnam, we didn't go over his units. We went over one at a time, you know, just in and out. So the guy I replaced was in command information. If the guy had replaced been in public information, the other part of our office, I'd have done what the guy I wrote the piece about had done, Steve Warner. And that was go out in the field and cover stories, do hometowners, interviews, pieces about how the war was going or not going. We sometimes have a great photographer with us. Now, by the time the war was, when my 365 days were wrapping up, the end of 1971, we were reducing numbers. So we were doing both jobs, command information and public information. But a little less dangerous, the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong were waiting us out. So that was the job. Steve's job, the guy I wrote about in the piece, Steve Warner, again, he replaced a guy who was in public information. He was out in the field.
He went above and beyond, though, according to your column.
Big time. As a kid, went to a small Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania, was in law school at Yale when he was drafted. What people forget is that in 68, when Johnson made a speech about not running for president, he canceled deferments for every grad school deferments for everyone except doctors and dentists. So in the old days, when you had your 2S student deferment, you could keep that for grad school. They would get you after grad school. You know, the draft would. So Steve was, and I, because I was accepted in the law school, he graduated the year ahead of me. He was at Yale Law School and got drafted. Went to Vietnam, had some, like we all did, especially draftees, serious concerns about what we were doing, figured, you know, the lesser of three evils jail in Canada. And Steve got really into doing his job. He wanted to be the Ernie Pyle of Vietnam. He wanted to get with these young men who were doing the fighting and dying, and he just wanted to get their stories back home.
And what happened to him?
Well, you know, when what people don't remember is that, yeah, Cambodia gets all the headlines, rightfully so, because of Kent State, but we also invaded Laos when we were there. It was an operation they called Lam Son 719. It happened in February of 1971. I think the way they sold it, there was some fatigue in America after Cambodia and Kent State. But the way they sold it was the South Vietnamese Army were going to do all the fighting. We were just supporting them. So they were going in and we were helping them get down the Ho Chi Minh Trail to engage the North Vietnamese Army. Steve, though, being Steve, and knowing there were a number of our guys supporting that effort, both on armored personnel carriers and helicopters just on the ground, artillery, what have you, went up there to cover it. And on Valentine's Day of 1971, when he was next to an armored personnel carrier, he stepped on a landmine and was killed. Hmm.
And what was your reaction when you heard that news?
Stunned. No one in our office, even though, I mean, you never knew where danger was in Vietnam, especially when you got out of the air-conditioned jungle, our office. But no one had ever been killed in our office in hostile fire. So it really took our breath away. I mean, nobody wanted to go back out and do hometowners and be a public information specialist. But we also, we missed Steve dearly because not only because that commitment he had to the young troops, the working class kids that were doing the fighting and dying, but he wanted to be honest about it. And one of the stories, and he was doing his own photography. We had great photographers in that office, guys that, you know, have written and done books about Vietnam, incredible stuff. But Steve liked to do his own photography. It's on display at Gettysburg College. In fact, there's a whole archive of Steve's stuff. And at one point, this is 71. This is the peace movement fighting the war, you know, or, you know, what are you going to do? You get drafted. You're not going to go to Canada or jail like me. And so, which I didn't want to do. And guys had peace symbols. They were given the peace sign. They had stuff on their helmets. They were wearing beads and bracelets. So Steve shot a bunch of photos of guys, you know, the grunts in the field. This is rough stuff. When he got back to the office and he was developing the photos, the brass said, "We want you to paint out the beads." Wasn't as easy as you can do now with changing images.
Photoshop time, but.
Exactly. But that's what they wanted him to do. And Steve was vehement. He stood his ground. He said, "This is the way I saw it. This is the way they are. This is who they are. I am not doing that." Of course, they threatened him Article 15 court-martial. Steve stood his ground, and they relented, and they published the photographs.
Courageous guy. You write in this column, Doug Bradley, about going to the wall, the Vietnam Memorial in Washington. Talk about that a little.
Well, honestly, Matt, I mean, as horrible as that war was and is, it continues to be in our memory and in our lives. It was America's second Civil War. We might be in the third now. I think there is nothing more powerful than that structure. It is, I've been there at sunrise. I've been there at midnight. I've been there on rainy days. I've been there on sunny days. You always see your reflection. You see other people reflected in you. Now there's a whole collection of stuff that people leave at the wall by the name. And I mean, the simplicity of that, but also the overwhelming tragedy of that is that the names are in the order of death. That's how the names are
catalogued. Oh, I didn't know that.
That's how the names are catalogued on the wall. From left to right, it's in the order of death. So when you find 1971 and you get February, you find Spec 4 Steve Warner, Stephen Warner, Panel W5, Line 104. Mm. Every time I go there, I've find Steve's name. I know exactly where it is now. I probably get there in my sleep. I do a rubbing, which a lot of people do. Sometimes I rub hard enough. I think maybe I can rub his name off and he'll appear. But it is just, it's a stunningly overwhelming and painful, but also in some ways a healing experience. Yusuf Kumanyaka, the wonderful, wonderful poet, Vietnam vet. His name was born James Brown. Yusuf has written an incredible poem called Facing It. I encourage all your listeners and viewers on Memorial Day just to find that poem and read Yusuf's reflection on the Vietnam War. It's called Facing It.
Speaking with Doug Bradley, you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, pitch hitting for Maggie today on the Civic Media News Network, Radio Network. Thanks for listening. Doug Bradley's written a recent article called He Ain't Heavy and has written several books on Vietnam. I wanted to ask you on this Memorial Day weekend, Doug, do you think it's especially hard for Vietnam veterans, or is it similarly difficult for veterans of the Iraq War, the Afghan War? You've talked to lots and lots of veterans in doing the books that you've done.
That's a great question, Matt. And I can only give you my perspective. I mean, it is at least enlightened by hundreds of interviews with Vietnam vets and you know, going into the hundreds now of Iraq and Afghan vets. And Memorial Day will always be difficult, I think, for veterans, family members, and for the rest of us that, you know, pause to think about that, the ultimate sacrifice. I think you have a lot of survivor guilt if you're there. You've lost some buddies. You were lucky to be alive, but you don't know how. You know, it's fate, it's chance. And, you know, for us, I think the extra difficulty was we felt people didn't want to hear our stories or help us get back home or listen or just wanted to get beyond the war. And, you know, I think it was especially difficult, especially when you have that loss. But it's not easy, period. The Iraq and Afghan vets I talked to, they're tired of hearing thank you for your service. They get introduced, they get applauded in airports still, and they get introduced at halftimes of football and, you know, basketball games. But that coming home is a tough process. It's, you know, you're on your own. You're trying to get back to your family. They did multiple tours. I mean, God, if we had to do that in Vietnam, you'd have seen a lot of people probably, you know, mutinying.
Yeah, I read about people doing 4, 5, 6 tours in Iraq or Afghanistan.
So, I think the thing is, Matt, it is, it's one of those challenging days. I think every day is in some ways for veterans a Memorial Day because they think to that name, to that face, to that person, to that comrade. But a day like that, it's not about, you know, the 2-for-1 sale at the furniture store or the TV store. It's about paying that kind of moment of respect and just grief, frankly.
And the hollowness or hypocrisy of some political figures must really rankle you.
Oh, boy. I mean, let's not get started. You know, we can go down that road. I mean, you know, we weren't suckers. Neither were our fathers. We were the sons of World War II vets. And far be it from being losers or suckers, they saved the world. And they passed on to us this tradition of service and sacrifice. Now,
yeah, that's Trump calling everybody a sucker who served.
Yep. And, you know, for us, the mantle was communism. Now, little did we know, the more we found out, had we known more, that this, a communist isn't a communist, isn't a communist. And what was going on in Vietnam was very different than what was going on in China or Russia or, you know, El Salvador, any place else. But, you know, we grew up with that ethos. We have to stop this next scourge. And unfortunately, too late for us to wake up and realize that it was all fraud. I mean, we know the Pentagon Papers and Ellsberg and that kind of bravery. But we were sold a bill of goods, and unfortunately, 58,000 of us gave with our lives, and that many and more have died never being able to get back home.
You know, speaking with Vietnam War veteran Doug Bradley, who's got a new column called He Ain't Heavy, and it's got several books out on Vietnam War, and some of it is on the music of Vietnam, which we're going to explore a little bit after this short break, get you to expound on how important music has been to you and other veterans coming out of the war, and maybe some splits within the ranks as to what kind of music you all listen to. And I'll also give a poem. I wish you had Kumanyaka with me, but I have Ada Limon, who's in Madison tonight.
Yes.
U.S. Poet Laureate. We'll be back in a second on the Civic Media Radio Network.
That's what they are.
You know it too.
Hey, Matt Rothschild, pitch hitting for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined still, and thankfully, by Doug Bradley, a Vietnam vet. I wanted to bring him in here because, of course, it's Memorial Day weekend. I wanted to talk seriously about what that means for some veterans. And Doug has written a lot about the Vietnam War and about music in the Vietnam War, which I want to explore a little bit more. His books include Who'll Stop the Rain, Respect, Remembrance, and Reconciliation in Post-Vietnam America. Co-authored with Craig Werner, We Got to Get Out of This Place, The Soundtrack of the Vietnam War, and a couple other books, Deros Vietnam, Dispatches from the Air-Conditioned Jungle, that he talked about briefly, what the air-conditioned jungle was. And he's got a music-based memoir, The Tracks of My Years, to be released by Legacy Book Press next year. Doug Bradley, talk to me about the importance of music while you were in Vietnam.
You know, Matt, it's something I can't stress or, you know, just underscore too dramatically and emphatically. We were the rock and roll generation. We grew up, you know, I can remember my father and my brother arguing about, not so much about Elvis, some about Elvis, but mainly Little Richard and Chuck Berry. I mean, this was a different sound that was coming into the home. And so it delineated us as, it's what separated us from our parents. It's who we were, it defined us. And that music kept reflecting who we are, what we cared about, what mattered, and also what was happening. That was the beauty of music then. And we, whether you saved or whether you stayed or whether you served, whether you participated or whether you protested, we all listened to the same music. So everybody in that generation has the same soundtrack. Now, if you're going to Vietnam, you're in Vietnam, you're coming home from Vietnam, Chain of Fools, What's Going On, Purple Haze could have very, very different meanings, and they did. So music was essential to us. And you know, the Adrian Cronauer thing with Good Morning Vietnam and Robin Williams, that part of that is true, that the AFVN disc jockeys tried. But we had other avenues of music. We had cassette decks. We had radios. We had reel-to-reel tape decks. We had guys playing, you know, guitars in our hooches. We had Filipino and Vietnamese and Korean bands. Couldn't say a word of English. They could nail a playlist. So they understood, the military did, that music was necessary and essential, and it was going to keep the troops' morale up. So we got it. And the best music ever, and the people back home had the same music.
I remember from one of your books that there was some division between what the black soldiers wanted to listen to and what the white soldiers wanted to listen to.
Hey, you know, I mean, this was the first integrated army. You know, black soldiers have fought and died for this country and bled their blood for centuries. Yet, we didn't integrate the military until Vietnam. Truman did it in 1948, but Korea was a UN peacekeeping force. That really hadn't happened. We were shoulder to shoulder, side by side with our black brothers. But it was, you know, they still hadn't gotten their civil rights. This was still Jim Crow America. You know, it still is in some places, in some ways. So oftentimes music, when you were in the rear, not in the field, silence in the field, maybe a song, but silence in the field, and you protected, you had to save your life and your buddies and complete the mission. Those were your rules. You get back in the rear, you're relaxing a little, maybe you smoked a little number, or maybe you had a couple beers, and somebody keeps playing, you know, Ernest Tubbs, or, you know, Bobby Bear's Detroit City, you know, time after time after time. So you go up to the jukebox and you play Sam and Dave, or you play James Brown. The next thing you know, because, you know, you're a little lubricated now and you're a little fired up, somebody throws a beer bottle and things happen. I would like to say, and I know it happened and I saw it, and we've been told that music was a way to bring us together, that people got acculturated and exposed to different sounds. Martha Navandellas, guy I knew from Wisconsin, you just played the song, Nowhere to Run. This kid grew up listening to polka music. He ends up a medic in a unit that's half black. He's listening to the Chambers Brothers and John Mayall and the Blues Breakers and Cream. I mean, can you imagine how his world got turned upside down? Similarly, black guys serving with guys from the South, Confederate soldiers, guys started talking about how they started to appreciate Jennings and Haggard and Cash. Music could do that. But also, Matt, as you pointed out, it could be a lightning rod. And we have stories in the book, and we were told stories by black and white vets about incidents where sometimes it would get the best of you. And if you didn't like what was getting played, you were gonna raise a ruckus.
What are you going to do with this Memorial Day, Doug Bradley? What does that look like for you?
Interestingly, Matt, that it's the 50-year anniversary of the founding of Vets House. That'd be a time for another program and another broadcast. But we know what the reception was like for people coming back, Vietnam vets. I don't want to play the, you know, woe is me stuff. But it was hard. It was difficult. And there was no parades. There was no welcome. But everybody thinks Madison was those places. It was so anti-war and anti-veteran. We got support from Paul Soglin, you know, the hippie mayor of Madison at the time, and others, churches. We set up a place called Vets House. And so we're celebrating the 50th anniversary at Warner Park.
Well, that's something surely to celebrate. I want to thank you for being my guest today, Doug Bradley.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Bradley.
And I said I was going to end with a poem. Here's a short one by Ada Limon, the U.S. Poet Laureate, who is speaking in Madison tonight. This is called, and it's along the bird line, Brian. Brian, you'll be happy to know we're staying with the bird theme. Sparrow, what did you say? A whole day without speaking. Rain, then sun, then rain again. A few plants in the ground. Newbie leaves tucked in black soil. And I think I'm good at this. This being alone in the world. The watching of things growing. This older me. The she in comfortable shoes and no time for dishes. The she who spent an hour trying to figure out that the bird with a three-note descending call is just a sparrow. What would I do with a kid here? Teach her to plant, watch her, like I do the lettuce leaves, tenderly. Place her palms in the earth, part her black hair like planting a seed, or would I selfishly demand this day back? A full, untethered day, trying to figure out what bird was calling to me and why. That's Ada Limon. She's speaking tonight in Madison, and there'll be watch parties all across the state if you can't be in Madison. I want to thank Brian and Tess in the studio there, Jess in the studio there on the board. I want to thank all my guests, including Doug Bradley, for being with me. Especially want to thank Maggie Dawn for letting me be behind the mic for the last 2 hours. And thank you, the listener who listened, the listener who called. It's been great fun. You've been listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.